Dodge City, Kansas is like a living memory of the American West, a city thriving off the economic success of its slaughterhouses. But while Dodge is growing, many nearby towns are not. And as a result,
we're the only quadrant of the state that doesn't have a four-year university or a four-lane highway.
That's Joanne Knight, head of economic development in Dodge. Now, without a four-year university, local students are looking elsewhere. Though some of them, like Xiomara Garcia, would rather not.
This is where I'm from. This is where I'm familiar with my surroundings. I have my family here. All the resources I need are here. The only thing missing is the actual education part. So I would stay here. And I can see the shortage of doctors and nurses, and even going into the doctor's office, talking to the doctors and the nurses. They need the help, and we need their resources.
This is KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. On today's show, we're zeroing in on Dodge City, Kansas, where high school seniors have to get out, as the saying goes, in order to get a four-year college degree. Now, there's a lot going on in Dodge today, which is what makes educating its young people even more important. Here with us over the phone is Assistant City Manager Melissa McCoy. Hi, Melissa.
Good morning, Sylvia. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today.
Good morning. Now, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on in Dodge these days? I understand it's seeing a bit of a boom.
You know, we've got lots of exciting things happening in Dodge City. We're definitely growing. Our school district just went through a multi-million dollar expansion to all of, that touched almost all of its schools. We have seen a boom in development, and our sales tax projects, which include our water park, raceway track, our event center, and our ball fields, are a great draw to the community and also a great resource for quality of life here.
And what's it looking like when you're driving around downtown or looking for a place to eat?
You know, it's actually pretty busy, and that's a great thing. You know, we just had state basketball here last week, 1A state basketball. And so we had people from all over the state, and it was fun to hear their comments and how surprised they were to experience the new things in Dodge. We've got a lot of construction going on. The museum is undergoing an very important expansion, and we've also got, which is located in our downtown, and we've also have expansion happening with some additional retail, and a Sutherland's getting ready to open near our Dodge City Community College on in the northern part of the city.
So, Melissa, what does that mean for the employment needs for your businesses there in Dodge City?
It means that while all these things are great, it puts greater demands on workforce, and that is a challenge to fill those positions, especially when many times our young people are leaving or have limited opportunities to further their education beyond the community college, which community college and technical school is a wonderful resource, and it is throughout our part of the state. But we're lacking in those opportunities and in also the workforce we need to fill all these viable positions.
So what does that lead us to? What is the city hoping will come to Dodge? How will they bring higher education to Dodge City?
So what we've been working on a great deal with our Dodge City Ford County Development Corporation, which is our economic development entity, is to bring higher education in the form of a university center to Dodge City. Formerly, Dodge City had St. Mary's of the Plains College. It was a private college. 700 students a year attended that college. It closed in the early 1990s due to a financial crisis. And when that happened, we lost that tie to the four-year education in our area. And in fact, in our own city, many of our past department heads were graduates of that college. Our city manager was a graduate, as well as our finance director. And now those folks are getting ready to retire, and so they're the last of those that were able to have that experience of studying here. So our hope is to bring a university center concept that works with our state universities to not only Dodge City, but to all of Southwest Kansas, because we see the need not just for us here, but for all of our neighboring communities. And we want to start with healthcare, because that's been identified as the most critical need. But we see lots of potential beyond that to bring in other programs as well in the future.
Melissa, that's so interesting how you describe a generation of people who are educated there at St. Mary's, and now there isn't that connection of a college that everybody went to, or a lot of the professionals in Dodge City went to.
It is, you know, we just actually were contacted by a gentleman who lives in Texas now who graduated from St. Mary's of the college and was also a Vietnam War veteran. And so, you know, those folks are still out there, and they have very fond memories of going to school here in Dodge City. And as I said, many of our professional workforce came through those programs and really made an impact, especially for leadership in our communities.
Melissa, do you know any young people who would be looking for this opportunity, thinking about where they're going to go to college or if they're going to go to college?
Absolutely, absolutely. I will say in my former life before working for the city of Dodge City, I had the opportunity to work for Dodge City Community College in continuing education, and I encountered many individuals that would like to stay here or, because they are place-bound, unable to leave their families, would like to stay here. I had an opportunity recently where we're doing some community engagement sessions, and we had students from the high school come, and they shared with us that they know that many of their classmates would benefit for this, and it would give them an opportunity to not only stay here, but they're also staying here. They're not leaving. So give them the opportunity that they can further their education and obtain those higher level, more advanced positions, and also help fill those critical shortages that we have in our workforce here.
Well, Melissa McCoy, I know you have a busy schedule. Thank you so much for joining us. Melissa McCoy is the Assistant City Manager of Dodge City, Kansas. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Sylvia. It's great. We'll be looking forward to keeping you updated. We have had some great news from the Board of Regents that they anticipate that we're going to be moving this forward very soon. So we'll look forward to bringing you more updates as we make more progress.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you.
I want to bring a couple more people into the conversation about higher education in Southwest Kansas and beyond. First, Celia Yopis-Jepson of KCUR's Kansas News Service. She's been reporting on a series of stories about higher education in Kansas, the latest of which is this one about the lack of a four-year college in Southwest Kansas. Welcome to Central Standard, Celia.
Hi, it's great to be here.
What got you into looking at this?
Well, so part of the context is over the past decade, Kansas has had these really aggressive goals of we have about half of our adult population has some sort of studies, you know, under their belt beyond high school. And we want that to be 60% or even higher. And that's based on research from Georgetown that says that this is needed to kind of open doors for people to get to the middle class or to stay in the middle class, to have those opportunities in life. They need something beyond a high school degree or diploma.
So the state needs 60% of
people. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. Right. Right. So we started looking at, well, why is it that Kansas isn't really making that much progress towards that goal? And one of the issues that arose during that is just plain access and how geography and access are related. You know, if you have this idea that everyone can just move and go to a college if they don't have a college nearby, well, it seems that the research shows that it's a lot more complicated than that, the relationship between if you live near a college or not, and therefore whether or not you're likely to get a college degree. And Southwest Kansas is this huge area that doesn't have a four-year university nearby like the rest of the state.
Tell me about some of the high school students you've met in Dodge City and their aspirations and interests and lives.
Yeah, so there are plenty of students who are planning on leaving the region because they want to get bachelor's degrees or maybe beyond that. They want to be physicians, nurse practitioners, and they see that they don't have an option to do that where they live. And then there are students who would like to get maybe are at the community college and they would like to top off their two-year degree with a four-year degree, but they're more limited in their ability to move. Their family may be working with cattle. They may have very specific economic reasons, family reasons why you can't just pack up and move 100 miles away. And so some of those students, and also financially, you know, some students told me, look, if I could live at home, you know, I eventually want to get a master's degree, for example, maybe, and be a physician's assistant. assistant, but it's paying for that bachelor's and making that possible that's really difficult. If there were a satellite campus in Dodge City, they feel they could get through a bachelor's degree while living at home, saving a lot of money. As you know, college is expensive nowadays. And then that master's degree would also feel more within reach. So I heard a wide variety of what kids and, you know, teenagers and community college students would like.
One young woman that we heard from in the beginning of the show was Xiomara Garcia. Can you tell me a little bit about her?
Yeah, so she enrolled to do a two-year degree in nursing at Dodge County Community College. And they really encourage their students to go further and try to do a bachelor's, maybe even a master's, because the region needs those advanced nursing degrees for various types of administrative leadership positions. Nurse practitioners also can help doctors serve more people, and there's a major healthcare shortage down there that we could talk more about if you like.
We will.
Okay, and so you know, she's looking at options. Well, what can I do, you know, to get my bachelor's degree? And her options are purely online programs.
And I understand you asked her about that,
right?
And we have a cut of tape from your reporting of how she responded to the idea of pursuing this online.
I learned better being there and in class and in person. Your professors are always there for you. Their doors are open. You're more than welcome to ask questions.
Right. And so what she's saying there is that a purely online program isn't ideal for her. She'd like to learn in person. And that's actually pretty common. So there's an idea that these kind of areas of the country that don't have access to four-year college nearby, well, let's just have them all do online programs instead. But there are actually some questions and research and, you know, that raise questions about how effective that option is.
I want to bring into the conversation via Skype Nick Hillman, professor at the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Hi, Nick.
Hi there. Thanks for the invitation.
Thank you for joining us. How many other parts of the country are facing a similar situation as Southwest Kansas?
Every state. All over the country, there are pockets that have some of the similar challenges that are unique to their regional needs, but similar challenges that have been described here in the past several minutes. And on average, if you kind of tally up places, the number of people who live there is about 1 in 10 people who live in the country have extremely limited access to post-secondary education, geographically based.
And you've been mapping these places out.
That's right. That's right. And the motivation from that stems from my experience in northern Indiana. It's very similar, I would imagine, in some respects. It's a manufacturing community that kind of lives by the boom and bust cycles of the recreational vehicle manufacturing industry. And when we're in the height of the recession, about a quarter of the people who lived in that area were unemployed. And I wondered why we didn't see giant spikes in college enrollments for that area. And turns out it was kind of hiding in plain sight. There's just not a public college nearby. The infrastructure, the built environment of colleges in that region is just very, very limited. And so I was just curious if this was unique to that part of the country. And sure enough, it's not.
And historically, have there been colleges and universities in towns and regions like this and that have closed, like we heard about in Dodge City?
I think that's part of the context, absolutely, that colleges, both public and private, and even for-profit, they, you know, don't stay open forever. And so I think that rural areas, places that have seen a lot of demographic shifts in terms of their population, out migrating from an area, probably are struggling with that question more than places that are growing quickly. But at the same time, places that are growing quickly need to be sure they have the built environment of opportunities around them so they can meet the growing population's needs.
Hmm. Celia, when we talk about demographic shifts, one of the things we didn't talk about when we talk about the young people in Dodge City in Southwest Kansas is that it is a very diverse group of young people, and there have been shifts with immigration to that region.
Yeah, exactly. The school districts there serve students who have a wide variety of mother tongues. We have, you know, Congolese French and Quiche, which is a Guatemalan language, and Spanish, Vietnamese, Burmese, Somali. It is very, very diverse. And that's also interesting for many other reasons. So if we look at college attainment in Kansas, we know that students who are from low-income background, students who don't have parents who've been to college, students who aren't white. I mean, all of these groups are underrepresented at our colleges. And so we're trying to figure out as a state, I mean, policymakers are trying to figure out, how do you level out the playing field? And that makes this college access question in Southwest Kansas interesting from another viewpoint as well.
Yeah, it's a very interesting to think about the generation of young people in high school today, thinking about their futures and what role college plays in that. Nick, what do we know about what happens when people move?
Well, I think the main thing here that I'm most familiar with is that the way we think about college choice and student mobility is not keeping up with the times. And so a lot of policy conversations are happening where there is just an assumption that students can just pick up and move, as Celia was saying, is not the case. And the importance of place, the importance of community and familial commitments to place are sometimes overlooked. And I think that is just becoming even more important. And most students, the majority of college students stay within 50 miles. In fact, you could even go down as far as 25 and you're still going to catch almost the majority of students are staying within a relatively localized area. Students don't shop around for colleges, even though the news this week might make it sound like everybody's trying to clamor into these selective colleges. Most students attend broad access colleges, the colleges down the road. And these colleges oftentimes don't get the kind of attention and appreciation that I think that the research consistently points to they deserve.
And Nick, you're breaking up a little bit. I think our connection is breaking up, but definitely hearing what you're saying. And I do think that that's very interesting in that image that we have of in our country of going off to college. And that is not reflected in the actuality of what people's higher education experience is in this country. Celia, what have you observed?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I've covered education for years, and I hadn't thought of it just in plain terms of geography before. I'd thought of it in terms of income. Can people afford to go to college? But, you know, in Southwest Kansas, I met people who own land, who run ranches, have many ties that make it difficult to move away. And when you don't have access to those four-year degrees, I mean, I think the economic impact is striking, because in Kansas, if you compare, so let's say you just have a high school diploma. Now, let's say you get an associate's degree. On average in Kansas, you'll increase your annual income by $4,000. Now, if you get a bachelor's degree on average in Kansas, you're going to see about a $20,000 annual boost. So whether people have access to that or not really does have an impact.
And Celia, you've mapped out what kind of degree attainment there is across the state of Kansas. It's in your story that's on KCUR.org right now, and we're going to be tweeting it from at KCURCST. But what does that look like?
Yeah, that's an interesting map. It's census data put together by the Kansas Board of Regents. And when you look at it, you see different counties shaded different colors, right, according to attainment. And you see it really stands out at you, Southwest Kansas. I recommend taking a look at that map. You will see this a dark blue shade, you know, shading that corner of the state that really shows that fewer than, I think on that map, it's 30% of the adults there have a two-year degree or more.
What about other places in the state?
Well, when you see, we have seven public universities in Kansas, and they're mostly in the you know, northeast and central, and we have one in southeast as well. And you can actually see, you know, pockets. The closer you get to a university, you see pockets of much more college attainment in those areas.
Mm-hmm. And do you know that we have seven public state universities in the state of Kansas? How I'm trying to think about where they're spread out. Of course, KU and Lawrence.
Right. So Pitt State is in the southeast corner. Fort Hays is in northwest Kansas.
And you mentioned that that's about 100.
That's 100 miles away. Wichita State is 160 miles away from Dodge. Then there's Emporia. We've got Washburn University in Topeka. Not sure if I missed anyone there, but so there's nothing in that quadrant of the state that would be a broad access four-year college.
We're going to take a quick break in this conversation, but in a minute, we'll talk about the larger implications of an education desert in Southwest Kansas and elsewhere around the country. Did you leave a rural place to go off to college? Would you have had it any other way? We'd like to hear your story. Call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCURCST. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross in for Gina Kaufman. Don't go away. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross in for Gina Kaufman. We're talking about the lack of a four-year college in Southwest Kansas, particularly around Dodge City. I'm joined by Celia Yopis-Jepson, a reporter with KCUR's Kansas News Service.
Hi.
And Nick Hillman, a professor of education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Now, as Nick mentioned earlier, one of the big stories this week nationally has to do with higher education celebrities and other wealthy people who bribe bribed officials to get their children into elite colleges. But I'm struck by the fact that Celia reports and Nick just pointed out that most college freshmen go to school 50 miles from home. I think, Celia, is there a disconnect about what we generally think of as going to college and the choices that young people have?
I mean, I think maybe a little bit, because I do think that we project this image in the United States, or we have like a broader kind of societal image that when students are 18, they have the world of choices in front of them, and they're going to move, I don't know, maybe halfway across the country or goodness knows what. But I think that shapes policy conversations, like Nick was saying. But the reality is very, very different when most students are going to college a lot closer to home.
We got a tweet from Leslie. My biggest regret is not going away to college. I went to my hometown university. If I had a time machine, this is the thing I would go back and change. I was just too scared to go away. I didn't have much parental support. Maybe college visits would have helped. Nick, I wonder what's your take on that larger question, not just on Leslie's point.
I think that's a fair point. I think students have different needs and different goals, and I think that maybe staying close to home isn't right for everybody, but I would say with a pretty high degree of confidence that the trends that we're moving toward is an increasingly new era of a traditional student who is increasingly older, has to care for family members or dependents, and is looking for college that is close by so that they can balance all of their other priorities in their life. And so I think that having colleges be prepared for that future is really, really important. And I think that there's also a connection here with, you know, sometimes we talked about online earlier, sort of online education and delivering opportunities via the computer to under-resourced areas. And I think that there's a desire for that, and that might be a good fit for some students. But the best evidence that I'm familiar with says that it works really well for computer science majors who are working on their master's degree at Georgia Tech University. Like, these are probably the furthest down the line in terms of the people who are most sort of ready to do online education. And there's good evidence that it worked well for them. But for a student who is who I just described, working full time, caring for dependents, needs to live close to home, online education probably isn't going to be better than that mix of face to face.
Celia, what's your take from talking to young people in Dodge City in Southwest Kansas?
I mean, I think that people are primarily intimidated by the price. I mean, think about, you're moving across state and you're looking at the prices that we have, depending on which public university you pick in Kansas, if that's the route you're going, you're looking at, just for tuition, $5,000 to $10,000 a year. So KU is, about $10,000. Add to that your living costs, the dorms alone. I talked to one student who went off to Wichita State for 1 year, struggled with the finances, came back and decided to work through the first 2 years at Dodge City Community College, and then take another shot. So I think that sticker price is getting increasingly difficult for people.
And one of the main things is, what degree options does Dodge City Community College offer? And if they want to pursue something, can they do it close to home?
Yeah, and across the state, there's also the very tricky issue that students need to navigate if they want to start at their community college. They have to think through a lot of questions about which credits will transfer and in what way will they transfer towards the major that they're working towards. And that can be a lot trickier than you might think.
I know young people realistic and aware of what the opportunities are as they're making these decisions?
So that's a really good question. I think that some of them are extremely aware, that have excellent support, and also some classes at high school that help students navigate that. But the Commissioner of Education in Kansas is concerned we need a lot more high school counselors and the types of advisors that help students navigate the wide array of choices and scholarships and everything that exists out there.
Yeah, it is a full-time job just to do that, or more.
Right, right. And I even heard, you know, in Liberal, for example, they have a lot of grants for students to attend the community college. And many students in Liberal, which is, you know, about an hour from Dodge, don't know about the grants that are available to them in their own community. So that information piece is huge because students are assuming they can't afford something when, in fact, 90% of the tuition would be waived for them depending on where they live.
Nick, what do you see with that nationally?
I think that's absolutely right. People are more dependent on their local options than what we've seen before, and it's the transportation expenses and like the scenario that was shared earlier about the student who wanted to live at home to go to college. I mean, these are, I think, increasingly the case across the country. Now, I think that there's always going to be the high-flying, sort of highly mobile student who's going to go coast to coast for colleges, and again, I don't think that that's that market is disappearing, but I do think that there's a renewed interest or a new interest in the local context, the built environment where community partners can get together and figure out how their libraries, hospitals, roads, parks, schools, and their colleges all kind of fit into this ecosystem of opportunity. And I think when colleges are out of the mix, then I think that it just limits the amount of opportunity that's available for places. If it's possible to, expand and grow, that's a central piece.
And then, of course, in the work that both of you are doing, Celia Yopis-Jepson has been reporting on higher education in Kansas, and this story that came out in KCR.org today, it's about the Dodge City and the lack of a four-year college there. But there's larger implications beyond the lives of the students themselves, the young people themselves, for the community if they don't have people coming out of a school nearby with degrees in health particularly. And you looked at how that might impact health disparities there.
Yeah, really. So there's a healthcare shortage. In general, Dodge they have a goal of diversifying the economy. It's a largely blue-collar economy right now. They'd like to bring in more jobs that can help people move up the economic ladder. For that, you need to be churning out more young, more professionals in your area. But health in particular is the first priority. There are, in southwest Kansas, 3,500 people per dentist. There are counties that don't have a single dentist, counties that don't have a single mental health provider. You know, if your kid has an anxiety attack, has issues, you know, where are you going to go? And then primary care.
Mental health provider.
No, or a dentist, right? You know, you have to get a fill-in, like you're out of luck, or you have to drive quite a ways. And primary care specialists, they have all sorts of needs. And Wichita State did a study that showed that people die younger in southwest Kansas. They end up in the hospital more for conditions that could be, prevented often with primary care, like, say, diabetes and asthma. And those are things that point to the shortage. So they're hoping that a satellite campus could start to alleviate a bit of that issue. It's obviously an uphill climb.
And so some of the majors they're looking for initially are in the healthcare industry.
Exactly. Yeah. So four-year degrees for nurses, maybe eventually some advanced degrees like physical therapy, physician's assistants, et cetera, through a combination of online and in-person learning.
And we're hearing out now from Julie in Shawnee. Julie, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
You wanted to talk about some other degrees that people may have to go pretty far to study.
Yeah, I run a youth training program for musical theater called Music Theater Kansas City. And we have kids coming from all over the state just to train with us because we really specialize in developing our students so that they can go on and major in the arts in college. So almost all of our students that want to major in musical theater and get what they call a BFA, then they're looking at schools all across the country, and they have to audition to get in, so they're going to many places around the country so they can maximize their chances.
Julie, do you find that the young people are up for that? Like, they really do want to go all around the country?
Yeah, and I think it's because they also have, you know, that ultimate dream of being on Broadway or working in Hollywood, so they know that they might eventually move pretty far away anyway. Mm. We're also trying to train them that there is great regional theater all across the country, including Kansas City, so this is a great option if they'd like to stay in town. And we do have students that go to K-State, Wichita State, they have good theater programs, but I found that for those specialized programs, we have students who have to look all over the country to be able to find that program that's right for them.
Well, Julie, thanks for that perspective. I wonder, Nick, when you look at the what young people want to study, what the communities need them to study, if it is health all across the country in rural areas.
Oh, it's going to vary certainly across the country, but I think that you're right. It's probably going to be health related. I think the caller's point is really, really interesting because it makes me think about the future of young people in America. And the future of young people in America is demographically, at least, increasingly not white. And colleges and universities are really designed well to serve middle class white students. And so we have just a real culture shift happening within higher education. What is higher education? What ought it be? How does it serve democracy? I mean, these are the big questions that I think communities are going to wrestle with, and I think we can get focused on the very specific programs, and that certainly is important, but we also can't lose sight of that big picture.
Celia, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that high schools are doing a good job of, they try to help students learn more nowadays about job options in their area that pay well. There's a national nursing shortage, and it's certainly a problem in Southwest Kansas as well. And nurses in Kansas earn very well. They earn more than $50,000 a year on average. I think it's about $60,000 if I remember correctly. And so you know, now at Dodge City High School, you see students taking a lot of health career oriented classes. I mean, you know, they can choose to take those classes where they can learn about a wide range of, well, what options are there to work in health.
And Nick, as you talk about solving some of these larger problems, not just getting colleges in these places, but what should a college look like to serve a broader, diverse group of students? What are some rural areas looking at nationally? Is it similar to what Dodge City is talking about?
You know, Cecilia's work is just really important in this way because it's showing some of the very few examples that I'm familiar with of what communities are doing in terms of these university centers kind of having co-ops of colleges come together to meet community needs is one really innovative thing. You could see in high schools, you might see an increasing growth in dual enrollment where high school students are taking courses in college. Those are some of the more common options. I think some of the maybe more far downstream options are to really focus on building that capacity of the college and really investing in a college in ways where if you build it, they will come kind of a mentality. I think that it's incredibly important for rural areas, but even in urban areas, you have clusters of places in Charlotte, North Carolina, for example, where there's a public university, but they exclude about a third of applicants or a number of colleges that look like they're accessible and nearby, but their admissions process screens out a lot of people. And so I think that even in urban areas and in smaller towns, you have similar challenges.
And Celia, I want to get back to what Melissa McCoy talked about, that university center solution that's being proposed. Who's proposing it? How realistic is it? What would it take to bring that to life in Dodge City?
Yeah, I think they're pushing really hard. So the city and the county have been pursuing grants, USDA funding, all sorts of things that kind of come at it from an economic development point of view. But then they also have to get the universities on board, obviously. Now, what they have a huge building there. That's where the Catholic College was that closed down. And their idea is that could house this kind of satellite campus or university center. Newman University, which is a Catholic college in Wichita, has already got a small program there for people who want to be teachers. So that's one piece of the puzzle as they see it. Now, Wichita State, KU, Fort Hays State, they've been out there. They've visited. Dodge City is trying very hard to woo the universities. Come bring us your programs. So Fort Hays is doing a feasibility study right now. We could see a couple of bachelor's degrees rolled out starting next fall, possibly. We'll know more in coming months, obviously. And that would include a four-year degree for nurses. Wichita State has suggested contributing a program as well. So I think it'll be a gradual, if they can do this, it's going to be piece by piece gradually, because the universities need to see if the demand is there. I mean, they're sticking their neck out. You know, they're taking a risk by trying something new as well.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. You're reporting that you're doing about higher education in general in the state of Kansas and where people are heading off to college and off to their careers in our metro area and beyond. So thank you, Celia Yopis Jepson, KCUR's Kansas News Service. Thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you so much.
We're just about out of time for this conversation, but I want to say thank you to Nick Hillman, professor at the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Nick, thank you.
Likewise, thank you.
I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. In a minute, we're talking to some of the bands from Kansas City who've gone to take over at South by Southwest in Austin. Stay close.
For the gates of Shangri-La, 600 nights I dreamt in darkness of the photographs I saw.
The South by Southwest Music Festival wraps up this Sunday, but not before Austin, Texas is invaded by Kansas City musicians. This is KCUR Central Standard. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross, in for Gina Kaufman. It's called the Midcoast Takeover Showcase, taking place at the Shangri-La Bar down in Austin. Listening to one of the musicians right now, Nathan Corsi, who happens to have an unrelated song called Shangri-La. He joins us via Skype.
Nathan, right here.
Hi, Nathan. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning to you.
So we're listening to your song Shangri-La. So how about that for a coincidence?
Yeah, it's... It kind of cracked me up when I didn't really make the correlation in my head, and then I was like, oh yeah, I'm definitely gonna play that this year. That's gonna happen.
So when did you get into Austin?
We arrived on Monday night. Yeah.
And how are things going?
So far so good. We had a little bit of rain but we battened down the hatches on the stage pretty well and everything stayed dry enough to get things going yesterday and got off to a great start. We had some awesome performers inside and outdoors here at Shangri-La, and it's gearing up to be a banner year.
And that other voice I heard there was Rhonda Line with the Midwest Music Foundation, who helped organize the Midcoast Takeover. Hi, Rhonda.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, and we're excited to hear how Kansas City is doing and representing down in Austin. The Midcoast Takeover is something that you've done for a couple of years now.
Actually, this is our 10th year,
we're starting to
know what we're doing down here. It's kind of a well-oiled machine.
And what's the idea? I mean, explain. I know we've done this a couple years in a row where we've checked in with you, but not everybody might have heard.
Yeah. Well, it originally started, we found out there was another group showcasing some Kansas City bands down in Austin. And the mission of the Midwest Music Foundation, part of it is to promote Kansas City artists. So we're like, we need to be involved in that. So the first year it had a different name. The second year we kind of took over and ran with it, and it's just continued to grow. The first 2 years we were at two different venues, but then we found a home at Shangri-La. They've been amazing to us. They let us come down, and for 4 days we take over. They don't normally have music here, so we build a giant stage outside, bring our sound and video crews down from Kansas City, and just kind of take over the place. And then we have a smaller acoustic stage inside to showcase songwriters. So the goal was just to showcase Kansas City artists during the largest music festival in the nation and get their music heard by a larger audience.
Now, I have never been to South by Southwest. I can't imagine what it must be like having so much music going on at the same time. How do you get people to come out?
Rhonda is being very humble in what they bring out here. Shangri-La during the Coast Takeover has, I've played a number of venues down here in Austin, over the last 6 years, for South by Southwest. And this is one of the best stages with the best sound and the best lights. The crew is really amazing, and they bring a world-class rig down to do this show. So it's a combination of, you know, having amazing talent and, you know, an amazing presentation. And then also, they get some great sponsors coming in, such as Boulevard Beer, and they provide some free drinks for different people coming in. So it's a free event for all. You don't need an official South by Southwest pass to come in, which is part of the allure. And also the venue that we use here, Shangri-La, is
cool.
You know, it's a cool bar that people like to go to anyway. So we get a lot of Austin locals that come in and just people passing by.
Rhonda, people just looking for music, whether they're officially part of the festival or not?
Yeah, everywhere in Austin, I mean, churches, restaurants, my friend's band was even playing at the airport. Anywhere in Austin, you can put a band during South by, there is. And I've been coming down. We've been doing this for 10 years. But before that, I came down in the 90s, you know, as a fan. And it's grown. It's just become overwhelming. There are so many choices. But I think, like Nathan said, ours is an unofficial showcase. There's a lot of these day parties and unofficial events where you don't need the badges and the wristbands that, you know, cost a lot of money. So ours is accessible to everyone. And, you know, we do a lot of promotion. We reach out to a lot of the blogs, and we have flyers, and the bands do a really good job of helping us promote the showcase.
And last night was your first night. How did it go?
It went good. Like Nathan said, we had a little rain delay, but we had built a little time into the schedule because we expected rain. And so everything went really smooth once we got going. The bands, I'm always impressed every year. Like, everybody brings their A game to Austin. And we, you know, it went really well. So we, and the crowds all day were pretty solid. So I was really happy to see that. And the sun came out. You know, we've had a hard winter, so it was nice to get some warm temperatures and sun down here.
Are you having the crazy weather we're having here in Kansas City and, of course, in Colorado and Kansas?
We had a wild storm the night before last. But that's been it. It's sunny and beautiful out here in Austin right now, and we're hoping that the weather holds up for us.
Nathan, tell me a bit about your story. You're not from Kansas City originally, but now you're repping Kansas City as part of the Midcoast Takeover there in Austin. What brought you here?
Well, I happily embrace Kansas City as my new home, and I got there by way of New York City, and in New York, I went out there as part of a documentary about musicians busking, and I stayed out there for a couple of years after that documentary finished up, and I ended up in Kansas City when my family moved out there. I left New York City for a while. I had intended to go back, but I ended up sticking around because I was able to book a tour out of there, and I formed a band, which ended up being Not a Planet. And that, you know, for me was enough to keep me around. And I found this vibrant arts and music scene in Kansas City that, you know, that honestly, like, compared to, you know, every other major city that I've been to is very formidable. And and has a lot to offer that, you know, you might not expect if you're not from the Midwest or you haven't been to Kansas City before. If you think, you know, if you hear Kansas and you think of Wizard of Oz or something like that, like so many people I know used to. But I've kind of grown into this community with the Midwest Music Foundation, and made a lot of friends here. And it's, you know, it's provided me with great opportunities to, you know, perform and grow as an artist, and also, you know, be part of the great mission that Midwest Music Foundation has.
And Rhonda, what are you trying to convey about the Kansas City music scene with the lineup, the bands that were selected to perform, what's the vibe you think people are going to get if they come to the Midcoast Takeover?
Basically, we're really proud of our Kansas City. We like to call it a music community, not a scene. And we just want to show the rest of the world that, you know, the music being made in KC is some of the, you know, the best out there. And, you know, a lot of times the musicians do get overlooked or aren't really known outside of our area. So, you know, we just want to show everybody how, you know, what we have in Kansas City, take it.
And I know you probably want to say the name of every band, but we don't quite have time for that. But I wonder if you can convey a little bit of the range of performances.
I always say we have, because we do compilations, and it's everything from country to hip hop and everything between. We like to really have as many genres, as diverse a lineup as we can possibly make.
Can you name a few?
Of course.
Kadesh Flow yesterday.
Yeah, Kadesh Flow, who actually, he was really good. Freight Train Rabbit Killer is a really unique band. New Black City, Me Like Bees are coming down. Hot Suede's a fun new band that's going to close out the whole thing on Saturday night. Jorge Arana Trio.
Ballot and the Undercurrents are also performing down here today.
There's just a ton of them. And the whole schedule is out on our website at MidwestMusicFoundation.org. If you click on the Midcoast Takeover link, you could find that. You could also find a compilation on Bandcamp and listen to most of the artists. Okay. It's a free download. So
besides the Midcoast Takeover, will the two of you have a chance to check anything else out?
Sunday.
Sunday's our fun day. After we, and for Sunday, we have to load all this stuff back up. So it's a hard work day. And then we treat ourselves. And actually, I have to mention Sandra Freeman, because this would not happen without her. She's the driving force behind this. Her and I are going to stay a few extra days to enjoy. Usually I have to use it for recovery. But this year, we're hoping to have a little fun, too.
And what are you looking forward to?
I have some friends from Austin. Used to be a band called the Meat Purveyors, and they have a new project. They're actually playing our stage, but then I'm going to go see them somewhere else where I could actually relax and enjoy a little more. I'm not running around working.
What about you, Nathan?
This is what I've been looking forward to all year. So I'm kind of in my element here at Shangri-La right now. And this is the first year that I've actually been working with the crew as well as performing down here in Austin. So I'm having a great time helping out running sound on the acoustic stage downstairs. And you know, I'm enjoying getting my feet wet on this side of the action here.
Are you going to get a chance to check out anything else, or you're going to stay close to the Midcoast?
I'm gonna follow the crew and whoever's sticking around on Sunday and find some excellent things to do. I've seen some great experiences in the past, like some of the bands got to meet up with Bill Murray like a few years back and you know, do some tequila shots with him and so, you know, like I'm hoping for maybe some celebrity sightings or something like that on Sunday, or at the very least a nice relaxing day where we get to enjoy some of the music.
I guess we missed it the day before we came. Shia LaBeouf was here at Shangri-La, and speaking of Bill Murray, he actually a few years ago came and bartended at Shangri-La, so they make a sometimes we just stay here and they come to us. So.
Yeah. And before we go, just that scene, like, is there one or two images that you can share with us who have never been to Austin for South by Southwest of what it's like being at this sort of, some people would say, the most important music festival conference in the world?
Right. Yeah. Imagine walking out on the street downtown, like, say, you know, Grand Boulevard or something like that. And, you know, seeing a sea of 20,000 people, and, you know, buskers all over the street, and the sound is, you know, just colliding, from the different groups that are playing and the different venues that are surrounding you. And, you know, everybody is, you know, filled with joy at, you know, because of the music and because of the art that's happening. And that's what everybody's here for. And they're, you know, they're here for something new. They're here to discover things. And, you know, that doesn't happen every day, and it doesn't happen everywhere. So it's a pretty unique thing.
Well, thank you, Nathan Corsi and Rhonda Line. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. And best of luck to the rest of the showcase, the Mid-Coast Takeover in Austin, Texas.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for talking to us.
Before we go, Nathan, we want to listen to one of your new songs called Satisfied, and we're going to go out with that. Okay, let's listen.
Awesome.
That's all the time we have today. If you missed our earlier conversation about how Dodge City lacks a four-year college, you can find it today and the reporting at KCUR.org. Find the show at KCUR.org/Central Standard. Tomorrow, a conversation about mental health in your 20s. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not tomorrow. Actually, tomorrow, a conversation that will be inspired by our friend and coworker, Jen Chen, who died last week. Tune in for that special show tomorrow, and we're all remembering Jen. Central Standard is produced by Melody Rowell with Coy Duggar, Suzanne Hogan, Chris Young, and intern Salisa Colaco. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. Gina Kaufman will be back tomorrow. Up to Date is next. Bye.